The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the theme this week is binding and unbinding, or being tangled and untangled. And that there are qualities of our inner life, qualities of being, that can look like each other, be related to kind of similar, but on either side of that divide. And so sometimes in letting go of how these two are confused, and letting go of how we get caught and entangled in attachments, because the wholesome side of it looks similar, we might let go of that too. But we want to keep the wholesome, that which is unbinding, that which is helps us to become untangled. And so conceit is one side of that divide for today. Buddhism puts a tremendous emphasis on freedom from conceit, and sees that conceit is clearly an attachment, an entanglement. And then together with that is this philosophy, this teaching, that that we have to realize not-self, to realize how many things, everything, but how many things in our life that we take somehow to be me, myself, and mine, aren't really that way. And they're not really who I really am. And so to let go of the entanglement with things that we appropriate for our self-identity, for the way we cling to identity and ideas. So these two ideas of not-self and overcoming conceit then lends itself to the idea that you're not supposed to in any kind of way be strong or be confident and show up in some kind of confident, clear way, like you're really there. You should probably sit in the back of the room. You should probably, you know, slump in the couch so people, you know, you're not really, you know, asserting yourself. But in fact, Buddhist practice is meant to free the emergent qualities of strength, emergent qualities of life that have nothing to do with attachment, that come from the release of deeper responses, attitudes, feelings, motivations for this world that we live in. And one of these can be a sense of confidence. There can be strong confidence in the Dharma, in practice, strong confidence in oneself, that we've learned how to navigate through the world wisely. One of the ways to have that that's I would like to suggest is easy to understand, but maybe not so easy to do, is to be confident that we'll go through the world and not break the precepts. So hopefully all of you are confident you'll go through the world and not act on any impulse to kill any other human being. You have confidence this is not what you're going to do. You're not going to steal from someone. And then from there, maybe, hopefully, you're not going to cause harm through your sexuality, sexual misconduct. There's where people kind of, that's part of the reason why their sexual misconduct is people start making exceptions, that you don't lie, and you don't engage in intoxication, but to have confidence in your precepts, so that we don't, you know, we can have that confidence. Confidence: we're not going to intentionally harm anyone. We're not going to purposefully go. We'll restrain ourselves if necessary, but that's not what we're going to do. And then there's confidence in our ability to not make things worse. And that's, you know, this is a powerful thing. Whatever situation you're in, don't make it worse. You might not know what to do, Maybe not knowing is important, but it's okay not to know, maybe, but don't make the situation worse. Hold your tongue. Don't act if you think it's going to make the situation worse. And to have confidence that you know what to do like that. To have confidence in your practice, that you can show up and be mindful and find your way with what's going on. And that confidence then feeds a kind of inner strength. And Buddhist practice makes us a stronger and stronger human being as we go along. It's kind of like we're cultivating and developing muscles, spiritual muscles, psychological muscles, muscles of mindfulness, muscles of concentration and focus, muscles of equanimity, muscles of non-reactivity, muscles of understanding and wisdom and discernment. And so these become strong, and that strength can feel embodied. And so that when we show up someplace, we don't show up with any hesitation. We don't show up in any way to kind of diminish ourselves. We might not, we don't assert ourselves, but we also don't diminish ourselves. And there's a confidence in just being present, in that midpoint between pulling away and asserting ourselves, but just there fully. This full confidence in being present and here, as if we count, as if we belong here, all that. So to navigate between conceit and this confidence, and not to confuse the two. In Buddhist teachings, conceit is said to be a product of the imagination. It is a function of its purpose is to advertise oneself. The way it's talked about in the ancient world is to hold up a banner, a flag. Look at me, I'm so great. Somehow advertise oneself as being great. Comes along with greed for a certain, for my way and what I want and who I want to be. It thrives with praise, and the searching for praise is part of one of the functions of conceit. It's a contraction. It's a form of irritation for the heart to have conceit. Oddly enough, for many English-speaking people, the word conceit is often associated with arrogance, which the Buddhists also associated with. But it's also associated with a certain kind of preoccupation with self, a contraction and tightness around self that is a negative, what we would call in English maybe a negative conceit, and that is an attachment to being or a preoccupation or a kind of being entangled with thinking of oneself as being less than others, being less valuable than others or something like that. And that's just as much conceit as thinking that we're better than others. It still involves the self. It involves comparisons. And the practice is supposed to free us from establishing an identity based on comparing ourselves to others, either as better or worse than. And then what can we do instead of comparing ourselves is that we learn just to be. We learn to be without comparisons. We learn to be without measuring ourselves against other people, any kind of standards at all. We learn in meditation to let go. To do that, there are some standards that we might have to deal with. The precepts, for example. The standards of making amends for some of the harms we've done in the world. The standards of learning how to speak honestly, truthfully, kindly. We might have to kind of clean up our act to some degree in order so we can really let go and trust this moment, trust ourselves, so that there can be an emergence of a non-arrogant, non-conceitful sense of real strength and presence, confidence, aliveness. And so we do things then without attachment, without clinging to anything, but also wholeheartedly maybe. We're not held back by attachments. We're not held back by holding on to complacency or resistance of any kind or ideas it's too hard. But there's a freedom in what we do that we do it wholeheartedly given the conditions of our mind and body, the energy that's available and all that. But there's not a complaining that comes along with doing. There's a just, this is what I'm doing to whatever way that I can. This is what's doing. So confidence, strength as part of Dharma practice. In fact, there's the five strengths, powers, that the mindfulness tradition that Buddha talks about. It's the power of confidence, the power of engagement, the power of mindfulness, the power of samadhi, and the power of wisdom, of discernment. And how can those powers flow through us, emerge through us, without conceit? I'd like to propose that conceit is always a reactive response to the world, but that Dharma confidence, Dharma strength, is not reacting to anything, but is an emergent quality that emerges through our freedom that we allow for. So, so maybe for these next 24 hours, you can look at this. You can try to take a look at this divide between two ways to be in the world. One where we're entangled in self-concerns of some form of other, of how what people think of us, or how we want people to think of us, judgments and ways we measure ourselves, that we're entangled and caught in conceit or even arrogance or even kind of self-diminishment that we might be caught in, versus in a whole other way to be in the world with confidence, with a certain strength. And to do this exercise and explore this, I'd like to suggest that in that whatever way that is appropriate for you, that you act in the world this day, you find ways to behave or to do that are expressions of confidence, expressions of whatever innate strength that you can tap into. It might be as simple as when you're sitting in the chairs, you might not slump, but sit in some way that also allows you to relax and rest, but really allows you to be, you know, it's a posture of confidence and strength. If you're cooking, if you're washing dishes, if whatever you're doing, see this day, you can do it with some way that allows something to emerge inside and be expressed that is strength and confidence without conceit. And as you do this emergent thing of confidence and strength, it might highlight where conceit is operating. And if you start seeing it, don't despair. Seeing conceit clearly is one of the great benefits of mindfulness practice. And if you see it clearly, then there's hope for not having it interfere with your life, not to bind you and keep you entangled. So thank you, and I hope this exploration is nice for you.